could you please just shut up? I know it sounds like I'm being rude, but I'm just passing along the advice offered by Dan Lyons in his new book, STFU, The Power of Keeping Your Mouth Shut in an Endlessly Noisy World. Dan is a New York Times bestselling memoirist, a former writer for the HBO series Silicon Valley, and a tech journalist who's written for Forbes, Fortune, The New York Times, and Wired. And he joins us now to tell us why we all talk way too much and how much better our lives would be if we could just learn to STFU.
Hi, I'm Dan Lyons. 2 years ago, in the early months of the COVID lockdown, I had an epiphany. At that time, my life was in kind of a bad place, and I was trying to figure out what I could do to make it better. And I realized that pretty much all of my problems began because I said something I shouldn't have said. My talking was a compulsion. In fact, I discovered that I'm a talkaholic, which is a real condition defined in the 1990s by a husband and wife team of communication researchers. A talkaholic is not just someone who's a chatterbox or gregarious. Talkaholism is akin to an addiction. One key trait is that a talkaholic will say something even when they know that what they're about to say will hurt them. They simply cannot stop themselves. That was a perfect description of me. So I set out to find the answer to two questions. One, why do some people talk too much? And two, how can we fix it? I poured through mountains of research and interviewed countless experts, scientists, psychology researchers, forest bathing guides, even a former CIA case officer. And in the end, I developed 5 practices that helped me control my overtalking. Along the way, I also discovered that anyone, not just an overtalker, can benefit from paying more attention to how we speak. In a nutshell, I found that if you talk less, listen more, and speak with intention, you can be happier, healthier, more successful, and most important, a better parent and partner. I want to share with you 5 key insights from my book. Insight number 1, how you speak is who you are. Speech is how we define ourselves, and it shapes the way we perceive others. When you try to explain what someone is like, usually you define their personality by describing the way they speak. Fast talker or slow talker, quiet or loud, talkative or taciturn. Our speech is how we reveal our personality to the world. In a way, the way we speak is our personality. And if you change the way you speak, in effect, you're changing yourself. Talking is like breathing. You don't think about it, you just do it. But when you start paying attention to how you speak, this leads you to think about why you speak the way you do. You're forcing yourself to become conscious of something that usually happens unconsciously. And now you're doing the kind of work you might do with meditation or psychotherapy. You're turning your attention inward. You're engaging in self-reflection and self-examination. You're figuring out who you are. In my book, I share a series of speech exercises that for me became a daily practice, and they changed my life. Insight number 2. Someday we may use speech as a form of medicine. When I was researching the book, I met a fascinating psychology researcher at the University of Arizona named Matthias Mehl. He has spent the past 20 years studying the way people speak and searching for connections between the way we speak and our physical and emotional well-being. Mehl uses a device called the EAR, which stands for Electronically Activated Recorder. People carry it around with them for a few days, and it switches itself on at random times and captures what they're saying. Mehl's first big experiment involved counting how many words people speak in a day, and whether men speak more than women or vice versa. At the time, a lot of people believed that women talked way more than men, but Mehl found that there was no difference. Men and women both spoke about 16,000 words a day. Next, Mehl started studying not just how many words people spoke, but what they were talking about. A few years ago, he found that people who spend less time blabbing and engaging in small talk and devote more time to substantive conversations are happier than other people. So much so that having good conversations, he says, might be a key ingredient to a satisfied life. That was pretty intriguing. So Mail tried something else. He set out to see if substantive conversations might also be related to our physical health. And remarkably enough, he discovered that there is a connection. People who have better conversations have healthier immune systems. To Mail, this all makes perfect sense. After all, speech is central to our being. And he believes we're going to learn a lot more in the coming years. One day, he says, instead of prescribing pills, your doctor might tell you, take two good conversations and call me in the morning. Insight number three, you should quit social media, or at least dial it way back. Social media companies have a business model that depends on keeping you online for as long as possible. To make the most money, they need to get you engaged, which means instead of just reading, they need you to be posting, tweeting, sharing, and liking. And they've found that the best way to do that is to get you angry. That's pretty bad, but even worse is that the anger you experience online carries back with you into your real life. This has created what I call the age of agitation. Have you noticed how much angrier the world is today than it was 20 years ago or even 10 years ago? We're all walking around feeling triggered and we feel helpless against it. Another problem is that it's really hard to break free from social media. That's because social media apps are designed to be addictive. These apps give you little jolts of dopamine, a feel-good hormone. You start to crave that dopamine, and so you keep going back. Anna Lemke, a scientist at Stanford, treats digital addiction by putting people on a dopamine fast, where they stop using all screens, not just phones, but also computers and TV, for a certain period of time. She says for some people, these fasts are as effective as antidepressants. I've come to believe that using social media was contributing to my overtalking, and that the only way to regain control and protect yourself is to quit social media or at least dial it way back. And that's only part of the solution. In addition to social media, in this age of agitation, we're blitzed with tidal waves of content on streaming services, podcasts, YouTube channels, and all this information is overwhelming our brains. We're just not set up to cope with it. We also all need to stop buying into the idea that we need to seek constant attention from other people online. That means pushing back against a world that doesn't just encourage us to talk too much, but practically demands it. Somehow, we have all come to believe that we should measure our success by our ability to gain attention. So now everybody is out trying to get more followers on Twitter or be a TikTok influencer. It creates a kind of desperate chase for attention that's not good for our souls. Imagine how much better we would feel and how much nicer the world would be if we all managed to talk just a little less and listen a little more. Insight number four. Most of the world's most powerful and successful people are under-talkers. Powerful people don't run around gabbing and shooting their mouths off. That's with a couple big exceptions, and I'm not going to name them, but you know who they are. But for the most part, powerful people hold back. They say less than they need to. And when they do speak, they're intentional about what they say. Barack Obama is one of the world's greatest speakers, but he's an even better listener. Richard Branson, the founder of Virgin Group, is a relentless self-promoter, but he extols the virtue of being a shutter-upper in meetings. Apple CEO Tim Cook is famously quiet, but he's using silence to draw information out of people. Silence is power. You'll notice that nobody ever talks about the strong, talkative type. Overtalkers are perceived as weak, incompetent, and unsure of themselves. They're also hated by their colleagues, and they're less likely to get promoted at work. If you want to be really successful at work, learn how to shut up. Powerful people also know how to get comfortable with uncomfortable silences. Most of us hate it when a conversation goes silent. Researchers have found that it takes only 4 seconds for people to start feeling antsy. When that happens, we jump in and try to fill the void by saying something, anything. This is a trick that a lot of people use in negotiations. They will simply stop talking and sit there. They're betting that the other person will feel uncomfortable and start talking. And with some luck, they'll start negotiating against themselves, talking themselves into a bad deal. Car salesmen are trained to do this to customers to make you uncomfortable. Try doing it back to them and see what happens. Insight number 5. Listening is a superpower. Jenny Jerome, Winston Churchill's mother, once contrasted the experience of having dinner with two big British politicians, William Gladstone and Benjamin Disraeli. She said, "When I left the dining room after sitting next to Gladstone, I thought he was the cleverest man in England. But when I sat next to Disraeli, I left feeling that I was the cleverest woman." The truth is that if you ask the right questions and pay close attention to the answers and sit in silence and let other people talk, people will reveal themselves to you. And when people feel authentically seen and heard, they shine, just like Jenny Jerome did when she had dinner with Benjamin Disraeli. Imagine having that effect on everyone in your life. The thing is, it's really difficult to become a good listener, and it's exhausting to do it well, even when you're trying. When I was researching this book, I interviewed Sandra Bowden-Lerner. She is a master listener. She runs a group called the International Listening Association, and she teaches a course in listening at Kane University in New Jersey. The first time we spoke, I prepared myself. Before the call, I sat for a few minutes and took deep breaths and told myself that I would just ask questions and let her do the talking. I recorded the call and had it transcribed, and then when I got the transcript back, I saw, to my horror, there on the page, proof that I had done almost all of the talking. Bowden-Lerner is such a masterful listener that she roped me in and got me talking. I had to interview her a second time, and that time, with some help from her, I managed to keep quiet and let her talk. Listening is also huge for parents. Next time your kid has a problem, resist the urge to try to solve it for them. Just sit. Be present, but be quiet. If you do speak, ask open-ended questions and then listen. Wait. Let them talk. Chances are they will work their way around to solving the problem on their own. When this works, it feels like magic. Okay, I'm going to resist my urge to keep talking and wrap things up here. Thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoy the book.
Thank you, Dan. That was Dan Lyons with 5 Big Ideas from STFU, The Power of Keeping Your Mouth Shut in an Endlessly Noisy World. You might also like our book bite for You're Not Listening, What You're Missing and Why It Matters by Kate Murphy. I'm Michael Kovnat. Thanks for shutting up and listening to this.